360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
And welcome to The Week That Was, now proudly brought to you by De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers. Big hello to David De Silva. We're pleased to have you on board. And we're now also, for the first time ever, going to be broadcasting all the way to Alice Springs. So we'll be on in Alice Springs from today on 8AJ between 12 and 1 o'clock. So fantastic news for us. And joining us in the studio for the big week that was, for a big show, we have got the opposition leader, Leah Finocchiaro. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie, and good morning, everyone. And hello, Alice Springs.
Yeah, I reckon. Woo-hoo! And we have also got the Health Minister and Minister for Tourism, Natasha Files. Good morning.
Morning, Wolfie. Morning, listeners.
And we are expecting Matt Cunningham to be here this morning as well. He is on his way. Now, I might just start with the fact that there is localised flooding around the top end due to the rain overnight, so please take care if you are out on the roads. Now, firstly, this morning, we might have a bit of a coronavirus update. We know that 10 Melbourne suburbs have been declared coronavirus hotspots for anyone travelling into the Northern Territory. Anyone arriving in the NT after 3:30 yesterday is going to be required to enter mandatory supervised quarantine, while anyone already here who's been in one of those hotspots is directed to self-isolate and get tested. Filesy, it seems as though we are going to be grappling with these hotspot declarations, well, all the time, really. It's a way of life.
The coronavirus uncertainty continues, and yesterday we had the Chief Health Officer participate in AHPPC meeting with his interstate counterparts, and particularly the Victorian Chief Health Officer. We had a SEMSI cabinet meeting after that, and the advice was to declare those suburbs. They're listed on the coronavirus NTGov website for people, those 10 suburbs in Melbourne as hotspots. So as you've just outlined, people entering after yesterday afternoon need to go into the mandatory quarantine. People that arrived before that time frame, Katie, and this is probably for your listeners, it's really important that they reach out and get a test. That is the direction that from the 29th of January through to yesterday afternoon, if they've been in those hotspots. And again, just a reminder, if you're not feeling well, no matter how mild the symptoms are, please, even though we know there's no community transmission, it's important to get tested and just phone CDC. They can work it through with you.
Now, I know that, this implementation does mean that the Northern Territory Police Commissioner, Jamie Chalker, has confirmed that there'll be road border entry points again in Kolgra on the South Australian border, as well as Camarwheel at the Queensland border. It's going to be reactivated, so a couple of those ones will be reactivated. I guess the big point here that a lot of people are continuing to make is they worry about the defence personnel in hotels in Darwin. Are they still in those hotels in Darwin, or are they all out now?
The advice I've got is that there is no defence representatives in hotels.
Is there anybody being quarantined in hotels at the moment?
Katie, I'll check that off air and make sure that I get that through to you. But the advice I've got is that the hotel defence quarantining that was in place has concluded, but there may have been cohorts coming in, and I'm not aware of that specific detail. Certainly, Howard Springs as a facility has shown, and particularly as the virus has evolved and we've learnt more about the virus, the makeup of that facility, the physical infrastructure, is very well catered to this virus. So we are certainly making sure that that's our main quarantine facility.
Because I guess that's what we're seeing all around the nation at the moment. And that's what's been on the agenda, is the fact that when we see, these COVID outbreaks occur, they seem to be stemming from hotel quarantine. And that's really the big concern, I guess, isn't it, Leah? And that's the concern that some Territorians have had with defence personnel being in quarantine.
Yeah, I mean, obviously our defence personnel are, incredible people for putting their hand up.
Absolutely.
And protecting and serving our nation. And so I think it's different than just saying, the average Territorian going into hotel quarantine. But it's very clear that hotel quarantine is that weak link, around the nation. But there's only so much that can be done also. But I think really what this shows is how important that vaccine is. I think everyone's looking forward to the vaccine coming online. We, as a territory, need to ensure that we get as much access to it as possible, as fast as possible, that our vulnerable, of course, are first cabs off the rank. And I think the sooner the vaccine rolls out, the quicker we can get back to normal.
And Katie, can I just jump in? Sorry, everyone's clearly listening to you this morning. I've just been messaged. The last seven defence personnel are leaving this morning from the hotel quarantine. We're not ruling out into the future that we may, you know, the Chief Health Officer may work with defence around a specific plan, because Howard Springs has got a purpose for Territorians and repatriated Australians.
Can I just ask, though, those defence personnel that do come to Darwin and that are in hotel quarantine, when that happens, are they Australian defence personnel or people who, or are they, have they been overseas or have they been interstate?
In terms of the defence personnel, it's a mixture of people, Australians coming back from overseas and also international defence personnel from around the world coming to Australia to be based here and to work here in an official role. And sometimes, are you meaning people, say, from Brisbane or Melbourne?
Yeah, like whether they're actually the ones in quarantine in the hotels, whether they've come from interstate and they're quarantining here or whether they've come from overseas. Because I guess, again, the concern is that overseas coronavirus spread. And that's, you know, that's what we've seen all throughout Australia. That seems to be the real worry is, you know, in some cases, some of those strains are so contagious that even when everybody's following all the rules to the best of their ability, it seems to get out, as we're seeing in Melbourne.
And as Leah alluded to, defence have strict structures and protocols, and they're used to following those routines and those protocols. But the Chief Health Officer works through with defence. There's plans that are approved, and all of those factors are taken into account.
Now, what do you think of the fact that Toowoomba is now being considered as a location where we could see another quarantine-style camp set up, similar, I guess, to what we've got at Howard Springs? We know that the number of international Aussies or Aussies living overseas is looking like it's going to be potentially decreased somewhat today. I understand the National Cabinet is meeting and discussing that, but they're looking at potentially Toowoomba being a location similar to what we've got at Howard Springs. I guess the big thing we've got, though, out at Howard Springs is the wonderful National Critical Care and Trauma Response Centre.
Katie, it's really difficult. I think when coronavirus first broke out around the world, there was a number of people in situations where they might have been visiting family overseas or working overseas, and they thought, I'll just ride it out here. This will be over. It'll sweep through. And here we are a year later, and, you know, there's no signs. The vaccine is certainly very promising, and we're working on that rollout, but there's no sign that travel internationally will go back to what it's used to anytime soon. So those thousands of Australians who, in some cases, no fault of their own, are caught up overseas, we certainly have a humanitarian response to try and get them home.
Now, Matt Cunningham from Sky News has just joined
us. Late
to the party.
Always late to the party.
Can I just ask, Bolsey, how many Territorians were caught up yesterday in the Melbourne hotspot declaration? How many people are now in self-quarantine?
I don't have that specific figure, but the figures were lower than we expected. So I worked with Health yesterday afternoon to make sure that the call centre stayed open into the evening, and that people that had left their number to be called back if they couldn't get through. But we certainly were able to work through those. It was a few hundred calls that came through. So from those 10 suburbs that were declared, it wasn't a huge amount of people, but happy to get some stats and give them to you.
360's the week that was.
And, of course, we are brought to you by De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers. And joining us in the studio this morning, Leah Finocchiaro, Matt Cunningham and Natasha Files. And not only broadcasting on Mix 104.9 in Darwin today, but also on 8HA in Alice Springs. And on that note, we know that Alice Springs has been going through some really tough times when it comes to youth crime. Now, the youth bail laws and calls to strengthen these youth bail laws are getting louder. We've been talking about it all throughout the week and last week. To be honest, I feel like I've been talking about crime and youth offending for such a long period of time. But the Northern Territory Police Association's thrown their support around the Queensland Police Union, who are calling for action around youth crime. Now, the Northern Territory Police Association says this national issue has been high on the agenda here in the Territory, with 50% of youths reoffending after being released due to weak bail laws. They've said the pendulum has swung too far, the government are asleep on the wheel on this issue, and it's taking its toll. Now, among the changes that the Queensland Police Union say could be introduced include the strengthening of legislation around youth bail laws and having longer prison sentences for juveniles. juveniles, as well as technology, including GPS tracking anklets, resourcing, so more resources for police and child safety officers, targeting the juvenile offender demographic and trying to engage with elders to tackle the social issues, as well as a national summit on youth crime, not just a talk fest. You know, there is no doubt that this is a complex issue. We speak about that every time we talk about youth crime, but right now it is by far the number one thing that people are contacting me about on this station.
And it has been for a long time, Katie. We've been talking about this for years. Of course, when the Gunner government wanted to make its sweeping changes to the Youth Justice and Bail Act, we were the first to say, don't do it. This is a terrible, terrible idea to water down consequences for youth offenders. And that has played out miserably for Territorians right across the Northern Territory. The Police Association has not minced its words, and they represent 99% of sworn officers in the Northern Territory. If that is not saying that police want action on bail, then nothing else can, Katie. I mean, people, and Alice Springs, you're listening, you are long forgotten and ignored by this government on the issue around crime, as is the rest of the Territory. You know, to find out through our questioning and estimates that 50% of youth who were arrested last financial year were already on bail shows that it's not working. You know, the Chief Minister talks a lot about having boot camps. Through our questioning, we found out no one's been sentenced to a boot camp, and you cannot be sentenced to a boot camp. And this morning, we heard the illustrious Territory Families Minister not even understand how many youth are in detention at the moment. Well, her Territory Families website has it. Perhaps she needs to go and check her own website. This is not about confidentiality. This is about incompetence. And the data shows that as of 18 January, there were 26 youth in detention in Darwin and approximately 8 in Alice Springs. So, you know, a government asleep at the wheel, not caring about this issue.
Look, I think that, you know, we've been talking about this for such a long time that it reached a point where Territorians are fed up and have launched their own class action, a change.org petition, which we spoke about last week. But I think, you know, the point is that the government can't bury their heads in the sand on this one for much longer. I think realistically, you know, if there aren't some facts and figures to show that the different programs and the ways that you're dealing with youth offending at the moment is working, then it's, you know, Katie, you need to try something new.
Katie, we absolutely hear the community. Crime is unacceptable. Crime happens under, you know, it's happened under different persuasions of governments in the Territory and around Australia. Sentencing options is a key, and that is why we've created more sentencing options. We certainly hear the frustration of community, and youth is a difficult space because you don't want to create career criminals, and you don't want to just, you know, ensure that that cycle continues. You do need to have different programs in place and different options. So those sentencing options are key.
Can I ask what the sentencing options are right now? Is it a situation where you, obviously, Don Dale is an option? I'm assuming that there's victim conferencing is another option. And then is there boot camps? And are those boot camps up and running?
Yeah, Katie. So the three things that you just mentioned, so you can have that youth justice conferencing and victim support and seeing if the victim wishes to engage. And so for some victims, that's important and they wish to partake. For others, they don't have an interest in that. The crime has taken up too much of their time and they just want to get on with their life knowing that the system is going to make sure that young person understands the consequences. The supported bail accommodation is in terms of making sure that young people, in terms of when they're on bail waiting for their court appearance, that there is supports there and they're being held. And then the sentencing programs, you know, there can be community supervision using electronic monitoring, for example, the back on track program, those camps that you've talked about. So it's certainly a difficult space.
I mean,
because you have to make...
Even just looking at those things, though, when you talk about something like victim conferencing, look, I actually think this is a great idea. But if the offender decides that they don't want to do it, they actually don't have to do it. And that's, I think, sort of one of the things that the community's saying at the moment. You know, why does it come down to whether the offender, the person who's broken the law, gets to choose whether they do or don't do something? Surely, you know, the person who should be thought about more than anybody is the victim of crime.
That's exactly right. And can I just confirm, no youth can be sentenced to a boot boot camp. It just is not possible. I've got it in on a piece of paper from the government. You cannot be sentenced to a boot camp, and no one has been sentenced to a boot camp. So that is not an option. What we need is escalating penalties for youth offenders. We need to target repeat offenders. We need to reverse the presumption in favour of bail for repeat offenders. We need to invest in skills training to give youth that last chance to sort of say, hey, we can give you something that will get you a job, that will build you a stronger future. These are the types of measures we've been crying for a very long time. But the government's catch and release program is wearing down everyone in our community and our police. I mean, 10 more police resigned this month, and overnight in Alice Springs, we were 18 police short. So police resourcing is a huge issue. They are under the pump, and crime is getting worse.
Are those boot camps running right now?
Yeah, there's boot camp options in the Territory, and bringing back, and Leah would know this point as a former lawyer, the court has before it an options. They can sentence.
So is no one being sent there, though? No, what I'm trying to get at is they're being diverted there.
You can't be sentenced.
Exactly.
So the court doesn't send you there as a sentence.
As someone, you're going to be sentenced to youth detention. You're going to go to the child prison, to jail, or you can go to this option to try and stop your behaviour and get you back on track. And that's why when you're dealing with youth, it's very different to dealing with adults.
Does the government acknowledge right now, though, that that a different approach needs to be taken in some way, that the community is crying out for you to do something different?
Yes.
So you do acknowledge that. So what are you going to do differently?
So I was talking to my colleague, particularly around Central Australia, although it's not to say there aren't issues in other centres in the Territory and the top end, but I was talking to Chancey Pake yesterday. He is going to, and he's a really strong representative for his community. He doesn't represent an Alice Springs-based seat. It's a regional seat, but he is based in Alice Springs. It's his home. And he is talking to people down on the ground, but through the prism of what are the solutions? What are people wanting to see? So then as a cabinet, we can work through that and implement what the community expects.
I would say that Chancey Pake, as the only Labor member down there and the only Labor minister, is absolutely failing in his duties to get the message to the government. I mean, my colleagues, Bill Yan, Josh Burgoyne, they are out there every day. People are crying out for something to be done. Petitions in the thousands are being signed. People are in despair. They don't know what to do. You know, Alice Springs is a town under siege. The police resourcing is a significant issue, and yet the government just keeps doubling down on its existing policies without looking at how it can make things better, what changes need to be done, or admit that maybe they just got it wrong.
Falsey?
That's the sort of disrespect that we see. Chancey is a really strong representative for Central Australia. He certainly makes sure at the cabinet table that he is not shy. He talks to those other Central Australian parliamentarians as well as the community.
Has the time come, though, do you reckon, where with Alice Springs, we're talking nationally. We've got the Police Association in Queensland. You've got the Police Association here in the Territory saying we need to have a national summit on this. I know something like that always gets pretty difficult because you end up with... all sorts of, opinions coming to the table, but sometimes that's what you need. I mean, here in the Territory, have we reached a point where realistically we need to sort of forget our political lines for 5 minutes and forget our political sides for 5 minutes and all sit down together and try and work out how to bloody sort through some of this?
I think you're right. I mean, I think it's a bit odd that we're saying, oh, we need to have a national summit, but we can't have a talk fest. I mean, if anything is ever a talk fest, it's a national summit, and that's all it would be. And remember, Wolfie, we've had a Royal Commission, and that, I know that this is what I say every single time, but this is what we're dealing with here, And a very senior person within corrections said to me at the time of that Royal Commission, he said, you watch. He said, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And that's what we've seen here. We saw a Royal Commission called for by Adam Giles, implemented by Malcolm Turnbull. I sat through nearly every one of the hearings of that Royal Commission. I didn't once hear from a single victim during the whole time that it sat. I saw it speak a lot about youth detention, and I saw it spend about 5 minutes tacked on at the end looking at child protection. I think they're where the issues are. You need to sort that out. I have a lot of sympathy for the government. I think it's between a rock and a hard place. It tries to do things that the Royal Commission suggests, and it gets smashed by people in the public, understandably, who are suffering from crime. It goes the other way and ignores a recommendation of the Royal Commission because it thinks that it won't wash with the public, and it gets smashed by the activists who say that, you know, they need to implement every single thing that's in that document. I think that we've landed where we are today, and a great deal of it is the responsibility of that Royal Commission, because I just don't think that it really took into account a lot of the things that it should have.
And look, I mean, at the end of the day, though, a Royal Commission provides recommendations. It's up to the government to interpret that and legislate. The Royal Commission does not have slabs of legislation in it. It has recommendations that need to be put into the right context. I mean, you know, you talk about care and protection of children, 100%, and that is why youth justice should not be in territory families. You know, that agency is conflicted, and they need to be spending more time on the care and protection side and leave dealing with the criminals to corrections but to be able to provide that oversight.
The recommendation of the Royal Commission was that care and protection of children shouldn't be.
It doesn't work in our context.
You said before, I asked you, you know, is the government prepared to make some changes? You said yes. You said that Chancey is going to sit down with some different groups and sit down with the community to try and work out what is required. When is this happening, and how soon can we expect some changes to come into play?
Just before I answer that question too, Katie, since 2015-16, there has been an increase in young people successfully completing their bail.
Many have failed at it?
Well, 50%.
You can sit there and look at the glass half empty.
What I'm looking at is the number of, you know, like the number of victims then that have been impacted by those who haven't actually completed their bail.
And so the number really since 15-16 up to 19-20 of young people successfully completing their bail conditions is up to 76% successful completion in 19-20. So you are talking about, this is not to say that this small cohort that keep doing the wrong thing and cause so much dysfunction in our community and their crime and their actions is acceptable by any means, but you have to look at the child protection system and the correlation into the youth justice system. It is complex, but there is, to give Territorians confidence, there is small gains happening, and we have to keep working at
it. On that, when 76% complete their
bail programs,
does that mean that they then do not go on to offend once that's completed?
So in terms of that bail for an offence that may have been committed, that's for that individual offence, as I understand. Yes, they go back out into the community. We hope that they don't re-offend, but there is a chance that they will, and that would be as a separate interaction.
And Katie, 50% of youths arrested last financial year were on bail. 50%.
Where are we at with, you talked before about the ankle bracelets. Where are we at with the ankle bracelets when it comes to juvenile offenders? Because I know that there was discussion, I'm sure I went to a John Elfrick press conference once where they were talking about...
Yeah, we think it's
rolling them out. And I'm sure I've seen kids out there, you know, different places with it on. Is that happening at the moment, or should it be happening?
My understanding that electronic monitoring is an option, but I'd be happy to get further information.
Can I just go back again, Filesy? You said that, yes, there are going to be some changes. Chancey is going to be meeting with different community groups. Will he be sitting down? Will the CLP be invited to sit down as well?
So my understanding is that Chancey is sitting down with all members of the Central Australian... that are Central Australian members today. He's catching up with Robin, with Josh and with Bill. And as I said, he is part of that community.
Why didn't the Chief Minister do that on Friday?
Exactly.
That would be a question for the Chief Minister. But what Chancey is he's part of that community. He's represented at the Alice Springs Town Council.
Yep.
He lives in that community. And so, you know, he knows that, and, you know, he put this on social media, that everybody's got a role. We need to see the leadership from Indigenous organisations. We need to see leadership from the community. And he's certainly showing that leadership. But
to him that he's doing that. I actually think that that's a good thing, and I hope that it makes a difference. Filesy, again, what do you think some of these changes could be that the government's currently looking at?
So we're looking at legislation that targets adults who recruit youth to commit offences, and certainly making that punishable. We know that, you know, in some small cases, that particularly with very young children, that it's older people being involved. Looking at the penalties for property offences, including unlawful entries and motor vehicle theft. And that voice of victims, it is a complex one. One, how do you strengthen the voice of victims? Because as you pointed out before, it is not good for a victim to have to try and engage with a young person that has no interest in engaging with them, and that may cause more harm. They may feel that they've spent enough time dealing with something that they didn't ask for. They didn't ask for their car to be broken into or their house to be broken into. So you do need to be careful, but there is evidence that shows it can be very successful.
Can I just
shout out to Madura McCormack at the NT News, who has just sent through budget estimates question on notice. Reveals that one child was GPS monitored in 2019-2020.
That's right.
Is that something we need to be looking more at now? Is this GPS monitoring? Just to go back to those points that the Queensland Police Association had called for, and then the NT Police Association has thrown their support behind. Is that something we need to be looking at? Do we need to take a closer look at using the technology, including those GPS trackers?
I think so, Katie. And talking to the police commissioner earlier this week, I know in Alice Springs specifically, the drones, our police officers on the beat down there have been utilising those. So we absolutely should use the technological advancements that we can have access to help fight crime.
You would think that if 50% of youth offenders are on bail, that using that technology, if it's available, would help solve that problem in a
pretty
big way.
But here's the kicker. Even if more youths were electronically monitored, police don't have immediate access to that data. They have to go through Territory Families.
But there's a centre where you can sit and you can monitor
and Territory Families are the client. Territory Families are the client. So if police want to go and try and find someone who's got an electronic monitoring bracelet and maybe check where they are, make sure they're not breaching their bail, etc., they would have to go to Territory Families and ask them to provide that information.
That should be a pretty easy fix.
You would think so. It's important police have this information. We should be monitoring people who are on bail, and police should have immediate access to that data directly.
I know you're not the whole government, but is that something that you would like to have a closer look at?
Certainly. I know that when I had the corrections portfolio, that monitoring and access of information was something that was difficult at times, and those barriers need to be broken down. But the police commissioner and the chief executive and minister for Territory Families should certainly make sure that police have the information that they need in real time.
All right. Now, the last one I want to ask you about, are you going to look at changing the legislation to strengthen these youth bail laws? Let's take aside for a moment the fact that it's something that the CLP has called for. Let's pretend they've never said anything about it. Is it something that should be looked at?
It's not on the government's agenda presently.
Why?
But in saying that, in terms of going forward, of course, we always look at what other jurisdictions might do if they make changes and they see success. But the advice that we've received from these agencies, from Territory Families, from police, to presently is not to. But it's something
I did
ask, always...
I asked the police commissioner earlier in the week whether it was a request of the police that those laws had changed when they did change. He said not to the best of his knowledge.
So, Katie, I'd be happy to take that away, and we'll continue to work through these issues. And as I said, other jurisdictions make changes and that could be implemented here in the Territory. We certainly listen to the people that work on the ground in these areas.
You know, we had a lot of tough talk in the lead up to the election about the government reforming bail and dealing with bail and all this absolute hollow garbage that's been delivered and served up cold to Territorians. And now, what do you know? It's after the election. The issue is even worse than it was before the election. And now we've got confirmed, both from the Chief Minister and yourself, that, you know, these laws aren't going to be looked at. I think that just falls so flat. It's, you know, a government's first responsibility is to keep its citizens safe. Clearly the Gunner government isn't doing that. And, you know, when the Chief Minister goes down to Alice Springs and doesn't even meet with people, it just shows the lack of leadership at the top and the lack of serious focus on this issue.
360's The Week That Was.
And you are listening to The Week That Was. We are joined in the studio this morning by Leah Finocchiaro, Matt Cunningham and Natasha Files. And The Week That Was brought to you by De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers. And we're now also broadcasting in Alice Springs on 8HA. Now, let's talk about a report by Matt Cunningham earlier in the week, which said there's been an internal row erupted within the Country Liberal Party amid moves to replace incumbent Northern Territory Senator Sam McMahon.
Over to you, Leah.
Well, Matt first, maybe. Matt, you've revealed that several people are lining up to take the number one position on the CLP Senate ticket ahead of a possible federal election this year.
Well, there are a few, and I've confirmed at least two. Linda Fazeldine up here in Darwin, and the mayor of Darwin, mayor of Alice Springs, Damien Ryan. He didn't confirm that he would, but he certainly didn't rule out when I spoke to him earlier this week. So it'll be interesting, that pre-selection battle, and there is a little bit of discontent with some people within the party who feel that there are some games being played by some to try to advantage their preferred candidate. Now, the president of the party, Jamie DeBrenny, categorically denied that when I spoke to him. He said it was all a Darwin fantasy, that it was bull dust. The insinuation was that there was going to be a motion put forward where, that branches that were not financial would not be able to vote in the pre-selection, and there are a couple of branches in the top end that apparently are not financial. That had some people in the top end get their noses out of joint.
Well, I'd be a bit annoyed.
I think that perhaps it is potentially now being resolved and everyone will get their vote, but it will be interesting to see whether Sam McMahon can hold on and hang on to that Senate position.
I thought it was interesting that you took such interest in this story, Matt, because I think most people are like, who cares?
But They do care.
Well, this is the thing. You the Country what? Liberal Party is open. So we go to open... So when I stand for
like
election...
It very open. You're trying to get technical and cut people
out. When I go for pre-selection, other people can run again. Me, and for every level of government, that's how we operate.
We remember when
and
you jumped across to spill it, not
you know, Natasha,
Dave Tomer
you can
out.
Jump on this all you want to try and run away from the crime catastrophe your government is creating. But ultimately, it's an important competitive process. You know, we need the best people for the job.
Who do you think would be doing the best person?
I think Sam McMahon is an excellent senator. She has my full support.
And you agree with her views on climate change and renewables?
But I'm thrilled that other people are wanting to jump on. But what I want to say is our House of Rep seats for Lingiari and Solomon are still open. I think they close on 14 February. If you want to be a strong voice on the Scott Morrison team in Canberra fighting for the territory, come and speak to the Country Liberal Party. It's still open.
Do you have a candidate for Lingiari or Solomon yet? Do you know?
Well, it's open. It's open. So that's not something I get involved with as a parliamentary leader. But you know, it's open, and we want great people to put their hand up. We want to have a fierce contest for pre-selection. You know, and get rid of Luke Gosling and Warren's on the way. Out.
No captain's picks. No one that's tapped on the shoulder or anything.
It's an open process. People put their applications in, and then it goes through that process. So it's important. It's open. Anyone who wants to be a strong voice on our team, come and give us a call because it's really important. You know, going into this next election, we need to have the best candidates to fight for what's right for the territory. And Labor have been absolutely letting the team down.
Well, Labor's also announced. Not announced, sorry. They've also going through the pre-selection process for some of those seats as well. And Matt, you had another story throughout the week that revealed a few names.
Yeah, my information is that Marion Scrimger, who's the chief executive of the Northern Land Council, is the most likely, the hot favourite to take over from Warren Snowden. She's one of four people who've nominated for that position. The others are Jeannie Govan, a guy by the name of Rowan Foley, who's the chief executive of the Aboriginal Carbon Foundation, and Matty Bonson, who people who've been around in the top end for a while will remember from his days as a minister in the Henderson government. But it's my understanding that Marion Scrimger has the support of Warren Snowden and would be the most likely person to win that.
You're pleased with that?
Warren Snowden, the grandfather of Parliament. I remember being in Alice Springs for a swimming carnival in the 90s, and Warren, as member for Parliament, would come and present you with your medals. And he has had a very long stint in the federal Parliament, and he's decided to not run again, which will be, his legacy and his efforts on behalf of all Territorians is amazing. But yes, as Matt said, the pre-selections were open. I believe they've closed now. And
who's your hot favourite?
The party will go through the formal
Deprive
process.
Deprive the Land Council of their CEO? Or?
Well, you worry about your internal CLP fighting
for
jobs.
Come
and all at the party.
Do you think Marion would make a good member for Lingiari?
All of those names that you mentioned I know and have worked with and have a lot of respect for.
She can throw it one way when it comes back.
Any chance the national executive or the leader will step in as they have in the past and deny the Northern Territory its preferred candidate and throw someone else in there instead?
Political parties, there are interesting things, but no, there's no indications. But I've been focused on my community not worrying about
well,
these issues.
Well, you didn't make an interesting point before. I mean, for all the argy-bargy, and it becomes public, and it's great fodder for journalists like us, Wolfie, but it's true that the CLP does have a process that allows its own members to select its candidates. We have seen on the Labor side before, and the Territory Labor, people within Territory Labor have been really upset about this in the past, that that decision has been taken away from them, most famously, of course, with the captain's pick of Nova Peris when Trish Crossan was thrown out. And even the national executive had some involvement with the selection of Malandiri McCarthy and some factional deals that were done. So, you know, Labor's much better, I think, at keeping these sorts of things in a house. With the CLP, you know, these things sort of get out more.
Because we believe in the freedom of the individual.
It probably is the truest form
Labor,
of democracy.
And Labor, I believe in the opposite of that. Labor is a closed shop. You're going to be part of the club or you're not allowed in.
360's The Week That Was.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is The Week That Was, and we're broadcasting in Alice Springs today on 8HA for the first time. We're very excited about that. And, well, speaking of Central Australia, let's go to the Barkly region, where earlier in the week it was being discussed, I believe the Alcohol Commission was there, discussing a raft of different things with the community when it comes to alcohol and some of the issues that they're experiencing with alcohol. Now, I caught up with the mayor of the Barkly region yesterday, who said that they've got concerns about a number of different issues and different measures that could be brought in place. I'd also spoken with Hospitality NT. And they're worried, Filesy, that the BDR is going to be expanded to, licensed premises, i.e., pubs as well, if you go in to have a beer or sit down for a meal, and that potentially it could end up restaurants in all sorts of locations.
Katie, we're not considering the BDR on-premise across the Territory, but in Tennant Creek we've got a situation where we have, unfortunately, extraordinary high levels of alcohol consumption that is directly associated with extraordinary high levels of alcohol-related harm. There has been a detailed body of work undertaken, and the Liquor Commission was in Tennant Creek to hear from the community, to hear from those licensees and their representatives and the broader community around what can be done to tackle these issues. It's not something that's new, and so that was the Liquor Commission's work this week.
This is disgusting. If, you know, there is such high levels of alcohol-related harm and consumption in the Barkly, why did the government not do the alcohol review 2 years ago when it promised it would? You know, this government has just forgotten about the Barkly. It's just let that situation unfold over 2 long years when the community's been crying out for greater consultation on how to address this issue. And now, all of a sudden, the Liquor Commission come in on their white horse, to save the day. I mean, it's just the lack of consultation is appalling. It doesn't cut the mustard. And why should people in the Barkly be the guinea pig for some untested, non-evidence-based experiment? Because the Gunner government's run out of ideas on how to deal with this. I mean, the BDR has been broken for 8 months. Still, if you look on the BDR website, there is no updated data going back to June last year. Now, if that doesn't smack of a government who's really not interested in making sure its policies are actually functioning properly, I mean, it's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace.
Katie, in terms of the alcohol issues, the Liquor Commission, working with police, it was decided to do a deep dive and look into the policies and what happens in Tennant Creek and that correlation with high rates of alcohol-related harm. COVID did impact upon that, but the Liquor Commission called for submissions. They've made, what recommendations that they might like to implement. So they went to Tennant Creek this week to hear from the community around what the community feels of those and how they would be interacting in the community.
Why hasn't that data been updated?
So there was, in terms of a separate issue with the data around the Banned Drinker Register, it was an interface issue between two government systems. Health has been going through and making sure that that data is verified, and I'm advised that it will be uploaded early next week.
So how long has it not been updated?
June 2020.
And I was told yesterday to be updated by yesterday afternoon, but now it's next week, is it?
The advice I've got is that it will be early next week, that health is just verifying that data. It doesn't impact the way the Banned Drinker Register operates. It is the collation of data and the statistics available.
Then what have you given to the Liquor Commission to give any evidence that this is what's going to be the silver bullet for people in the Barkly? I mean, it's ridiculous. You can't even assess since June last year the effectiveness of the Banned Drinker Register, and yet you're just expanding it in this ad hoc way when you should have completed a review into the sweeping changes to alcohol policy in that region over 2 years ago. You can't blame COVID. COVID was 1 year ago. This should have been done 2 years ago.
What I find a bit odd with all of this, Wolfie, is that we seem to have two different approaches to liquor laws now, one that applies to people in Darwin and one that applies to everywhere else. I mean, a couple of months ago, the government changed its legislation to allow Dan Murphy's to be built in Darwin, and yet now they're looking at implementing a BDR inside licensed venues in Tennant Creek. Why do people in Tennant Creek get treated differently to people in Darwin, and why does a decision in Darwin, why is a decision in Darwin allowed to bypass the Liquor Commission, and why is the
Something
Liquor
like
Commission in charge of a decision in Tennant
exactly.
Creek?
Exactly. And do you know what, Matt? Who was notably absent from that debate at the time? The alcohol minister herself, the Honourable Natasha Fyles, sitting right opposite me.
Well, that's
we know
she didn't agree with
that's exactly right. So we know this issue of alcohol is caused a deep divide within the Labor government. And we also know, Natasha, that you wrote a letter to the Liquor Commission, presumably giving your views on what the Liquor Commission should do, and that they are not releasing that letter. So why won't your letter to the Liquor Commission on this review
I've
be made public?
Letter.
You've got it.
Can you make
their
it public?
For it yesterday, and
What's
they sent it,
say?
It to me straight away.
No, oh, excellent. Can I get a copy?
I'm sure Natasha will be happy to send it to you, but
Sorry,
it wasn't anything too controversial. No. It just details the extra police and workers that have been implemented in Tennant Creek.
Look, for me, I'm not opposed to different measures being implemented to try and solve the issues we've got with alcohol. But the concern that I've got is from what I am hearing from police inside, who work in the Watch House and in other locations, saying that even people who are on the banned drinkers register end up in the Watch House more than once a week. It's not stopping people from getting their hands on alcohol.
It never has, Wolfie.
And secondary supply is really bad. And secondary supply is causing police enormous issues. I mean, we saw the response late last year from police having to put in place new measures. I mean, the resourcing that goes into addressing that problem, it's like a bucket with 1,000 holes and they're trying to get their fingers on them. It's not good enough. And again, our police are being asked to do more with less, and the government's just falling asleep at the wheel. I mean, that BDR costs about $5.8 million a year of taxpayers' money to administer. We want to be getting bang for buck for
it. Can I ask very quickly, with the Tennant Creek, if there is the rollout of the BDR into other licensed premises, so on, what do you call it,
on premise,
who's going to pay for the equipment?
So, Katie, with the Banned Drinker Register, the Northern Territory Government provides that those resources, that equipment, the scanners and the computers into the licensees, and that's been a well-established practice. So if this does come back as a recommendation, and the Liquor Commission have been on the ground listening to police, listening to the community, listening to those licensees, and there's not one licensing model, there's not one set of measures for each community that you can replicate across the territory. Each community's got different issues. We have to acknowledge that this stems from, really high rates of alcohol-related abuse and harm in Tennant Creek. We've focused on the rehab, providing a grant to Bradag for a new facility there to help with rehab, but this is stopping the supply of alcohol at the point of sale.
I see pretty high rates of alcohol abuse and incidents that stem from them in Mitchell Street on a Saturday night. Would you introduce that there as well?
As I said at the outset, we're not looking at the BDR on premise across the territory. It's not a policy consideration right now. What we have seen on...
So why should it be subjected to people in Tennant Creek if it's not going to be subjected to people in Mitchell Street?
So what we have seen on Mitchell Street is some licensees have got a scanning system where people scan their details to enter late night venues. And for those licensees, they see a reduction in their risk-based licensing fee. So this is something that the Liquor Commission have suggested as a measure to try and deal with these extremely high rates. We will see the outcome of their final decision and go from there.
But we don't even know if it works. I mean, it's an experiment for the people of the Barclay.
All right. We are unfortunately going to have to leave it there. Time always runs out quickly on this show. Leah Finocchiaro, Opposition Leader, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you. And to all the teachers and staff and kids who had their first week back, well done. You got through it. Plenty more.
Matt Cunningham, Sky News, thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks, Wolfie. Great to be here.
And Natasha Fyles, the Health Minister. Now, thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks, Wolfie.
Before I let any of you go, I'm going to be doing park run tomorrow morning in Palmerston as part of Feb Fit. Who's going to join me?
Oh, God, no.
That was Leah's
I've
response.
Already told you.
I reckon I can bully Filesy into it.
You don't need to bully me,
you'll
Katie.
You'll do it.
She'll cross the Berrima line.
Excellent.
You too.
Bring your suitcase.
Palmerston yesterday, Leah.
Bring your suitcases.
I have run Palmerston Park Run before, and now, I do love my Nightcliff Park Run every Saturday.
Well, Farzi, excellent. Thank you. We'll see you 6:45 tomorrow morning. Now, who's going to join my team, though, on the step challenge?
I'm in already, Wolfie.
I'm not doing that either.
Oh, negative Nelly over there. She's not doing anything this week.
I've got priorities.
No steps.
And my priorities don't involve being somewhere to run at 7 in the morning and walking too much. So, you know,
Katie, all I'll say is that people that get up early and get the day underway are the most productive. I'll see you tomorrow at 6:45.
My wife bought me one of those stepper watches for Christmas. I think she was trying to tell me something.
She's giving you a hint.
I turn that bit off.
We better wrap up. Good on you all. Thanks so much for your time this morning. You are listening to Mix 104.9 and great to be with our crew in Alice Springs today as well on 8HA.